Good morning.
Microphone that was not turned on. So in this small rural town, there was one intersection, one traffic light. It was a place where everyone knew each other. And of course, there were rules. And they all looked at each other. So this one farmer always drove his truck and put one of his animals on the front seat as a passenger. And so since they all knew each other, some people were upset about this. They thought it was a danger. It was a traffic problem. It could be even a crime to do this. You know, no seatbelt, the front passenger. What a problem, right? So, of course, the farmer was stopped by the police at the major intersection because he was carrying his sheep in the passenger seat. The police said, "Sir, now you know we've told you. You can't do this. Why don't you take that sheep to the zoo? That way you don't have to deal with this anymore." He said, "You know what, officer? That's a good idea." So the man took the sheep to the zoo. Problem solved, right? A week later, same intersection. Same farmer with the truck, same sheep on the passenger side. Police officer, once again, "Sir," he noticed that the man was wearing eyeglasses. He put some eyeglasses on the sheep. Sheep is wearing eyeglasses. "I thought we resolved the problem last week. You were going to take the sheep to the zoo, and this would be over." "Oh, officer, thank you so much for your suggestion. We had such a good time. Now today we're going to the beach." Talk about not getting it. You know, when Jesus says today in the gospel that they looked like sheep without a shepherd, for us it's kind of hard to envision because we live in the city. We don't spend a lot of time in rural places. But you know, one of the things I've observed, especially going to Israel, and I'll be there in a few days, God willing, is that from a distance you see, every once in a while, shepherds in the field with their sheep. And if you look at them closely and listen to them, you hear the peculiar noise that they make and how the sheep are all very organized in their flock and they're following the shepherd. And I can imagine Jesus using this image before this community that understood exactly what he meant. They looked like sheep without a shepherd. They looked like they were scattered. They didn't know where they were going. There was no direction, no one to give them signals as to where to walk and what to do. So they were lost. And these people came from all over. I'm sure many of them were not Jewish. Many of them came from other places and other customs and other belief systems. But they were all somehow there because they could recognize something special in Jesus. The gospel even tells us that the disciples and he had very little time to even eat. So they went from place to place and people followed them. And some of them just needed a miracle. Some of them just needed to touch the cloak to be healed. And so, of course, we recognize right from the beginning of this gospel the Good Shepherd. Such a powerful image. And if you look at the entire gospel from beginning to end, what you see is that God really cares. That God cares so much for those who are suffering, those who are injured, those who are in need of a word of hope. God really cares, and he cared so much, He sent us his only son to show us that he cares. God cares. And in our humanity today, in our entire world, I believe that what people are longing for the most is to get to know that God who cares. People are not that interested in religion. People are not that interested in belief systems. They're not even that interested in worship, unfortunately. But they are interested in knowing that they have a God who cares. And I would venture to say that our mission as followers of Jesus in today's world is to show the world that we believe in a God who cares. Not in a faraway God, not in a distant God, but in a God who cares. A God who came among us to show us the way. You know, you look at the world today and there seem to be a lot of scattered sheep, don't you think? People who don't really know what voices to follow, what rhythms to follow, where to go, but they do want to know that they are loved and cared for. I want to share with you a true story of something that happened not too long ago. It happened in Iowa. One morning, the members of an Iowa synagogue awoke to find neo-Nazi graffiti covering the walls of their temple. And you can imagine the entire community, the whole city, religious leaders of all faiths, they reacted with anger and outrage. The messages of hatred by some neo-Nazi group all over this beautiful house of worship. 2 weeks later, the police arrested an 18-year-old male and his 17-year-old girlfriend. The community demanded that the two be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. But first, the synagogue's rabbi had asked the police to please allow him and some of his members to speak to these two teenagers. And the two offenders met with the synagogue rabbi, two Holocaust survivors that were members there, a former member of the Israeli army, and three of the temple elders. You can imagine what that meeting was like. There were tears, fear, there was anger. As the rabbi and the members of the Jewish community told their horror stories of how the Holocaust, the atrocities of the Second World War, everything that they suffered with their families going into hiding, fleeing the Nazis, all the atrocities that they suffered, struggling just to survive and doing everything they could to flee and make new lives far from their homelands. Despite those scars and those nightmares, despite the pain that they were suffering as a result of bringing back all these memories and trying to explain to these young people what awful things they suffered because they were Jews, they also listened to the teenagers. They opened their hearts to them. And then the teens told their story as well. You know, as a child, that 18-year-old boy had suffered significant physical, sexual, and emotional abuse. He had suffered so much physical abuse that he had hearing loss. And he had a speech defect that was very obvious. He ran away from home at 14, running away from all of that. And he was taken in by members of a white supremacist group. Completely indoctrinated by bigotry, by hatred, he decided to come to Iowa and to start his own neo-Nazi group. His only recruit the whole time he was there was this young girl who became his girlfriend. Vandalizing that synagogue, they explained, was a way of telling everyone in their white supremacist group that they had made it. It was their only way to show their success in their new ideology. In this 3-hour meeting, though, a radical change took place. That synagogue community came together to listen to these teens to try to understand why they did what they did, as much as it hurt them. They wanted to understand those ugly Jewish stereotypes, the anti-Semitism, the hatred that they had learned, all of that was challenged by real people for the first time. They got to meet face to face the people they were taught to hate. The two asked for the temple's forgiveness. Now, in the Jewish tradition, forgiveness is something that must be earned. So it was agreed upon that these teenagers would perform 200 hours of service, community service to the synagogue. 100 hours under the custodian, what we call the sexton of the place, where they would clean up the property, paint what they had done, and try to fix and restore the physical plant to its original beauty. The other 100 hours were to be spent studying history, especially the history of the Second World War and the impact of the Nazis on the Jews, and also the history of the Holocaust with the rabbi. But the temple didn't stop there. The temple offered them medical and mental health therapy because they needed attention. The boy, as a result of years of physical abuse, and both the young boy and the young woman both needed help, obviously, with mental health, emotional therapy. They even went so far as to request that they would remove the tattoos from their arms with all the Nazi symbols and all the hatred symbols that were on their arm. The synagogue then went on to see that the teens would gain some job-seeking skills, that they would be able to study for their GED and complete their education, and they would meet every 3 months to see how they were doing. See, forgiveness in this setting was not just a quick fix solution. It was a transformative experience, both for the synagogue and for the young people who committed those atrocities. At the end of the process, when the rabbi and the members of the congregation saw that they really meant that they were sorry, all of the criminal charges were dropped. And there was a new relationship. A new relationship of love. See, it was through the love and care of those people who tried to understand their offenders that they were able to understand that God really cares. These were people of God. And these people cared about those two young people. They showed that they really cared. They didn't just throw their arms up in outrage and say, "Look what they did to us." They went out of their way to show them the love and care of God. See, and that's what the image of the Good Shepherd's all about. We believe in a God that didn't just come into this world to preach the good news. He came to do the good news. And we're doers of the good news. We have to show others that our God cares, and because our God cares, we care. We can't be indifferent to the suffering in our world. Because just as the suffering is real, and it's very real, so is the love and compassion of God. In the gospel today, it tells us Jesus saw them and looked at them with compassion because they were like sheep without a shepherd. Think in our world today, how many young people need mentoring? Someone to listen to them, not just give them a speech, but someone to listen to them, to try to help them understand different options, ways to go. How many adults among us in our communities feel totally alone because they have no one to really listen to them? Think about how many opportunities we have to show people that, yes, God really cares. Another true story. This one is of a U.S. Naval Academy graduate, a jet pilot in the Vietnam War. He flew 75, listen to me carefully, 75 successful combat missions. But on that 75th, the 76th maybe, his plane was destroyed. And Charles Plum was his name, U.S. jet pilot in Vietnam, ejected and parachuted into enemy hands, and of course ended up in a communist prison for 6 years in Vietnam. Those of you who do not know about what it means to end up in a communist prison, I can tell you from my own experience, from my parents' homeland, it's ugly. They don't treat you well. It's not like ending up in a U.S. prison. A lot of torture, a lot of mistreatment. But this man, this brave man, survived that ordeal and dedicated his time now to lecture and to talk to people. But one day he's sitting down at a restaurant with his wife eating. And there's another man walking by. And he says, "Hey, are you Plum? Are you one of those jet fighters in Vietnam? Were you ejected from the Kitty Hawk? You were shot down?" And Plum looked at him and said, "How in the world did you know that?" He says, "I packed your parachute. I packed your parachute." Plum was surprised, and he got up and gave the man a big hug. Says, "I guess it worked. It sure did, because if that chute hadn't worked, I wouldn't be here today." And Plum couldn't sleep that night. Imagine thinking about that man. Plum says, "You know, I kept wondering what he might have looked like in a Navy uniform, you know, with a white hat and a bib and the back and bell-bottom trousers. I wonder how many times I might have seen him and never said good morning or how are you or anything. Because, you see, I was a fighter pilot and he was just a sailor." Plum thought of the many hours the sailor had spent on a long wooden table in the bowels of the ship, carefully weaving the shrouds and folding the silks of each parachute, holding in his hands each time the fate of someone he really didn't know. Isn't that the image of the Good Shepherd? Think about your life. Who packed your parachute? How'd you get here? How'd you get here today? Someone packed your parachute. That's why you're here. I suggest it's Jesus, the Good Shepherd, who's been leading us and guiding us to this moment through people who have loved us, parents and teachers and mentors and youth leaders and choir directors and all kinds of people who have led us and brought us here, Sunday school teachers, sometimes some clergy, I hope. People who led us and allowed us to get to where we are today, they packed our parachute. They were the ones who helped us with that physical parachute, with that mental parachute, with that emotional parachute, with that spiritual parachute. Sometimes we even fail to say hello. Sometimes we forget to say good morning, Lord. Thank you for this new day. Thank you that I've made it to this moment. Sometimes we're too busy to even talk to the one who packed our parachute. We may even ignore that he's there. But I'm here to tell you, God still cares. God cares for you. And I want to say something to you that I really thought about when I read these stories, especially that first story. There are many in our world who are indifferent to God because they've been deeply hurt. I'm going to repeat that. There are many who are indifferent to God because they've been deeply hurt. They've been abused, mistreated. They can't experience the love of God in their hearts because the hurt is too deep. There's people who have been hurt by the church. All you have to do is watch the news and see people at every level of the church, all the way to the very, very top, who have abused others, especially young, vulnerable people. And I say this to you because sometimes we ignore abuse. We stuff abuse. When you hear the stories of 50 and 60-year-old men coming out and saying, yes, they did this to me when I was 11. They did this to me when I was 16. Or this happened to me when I was a child. Or someone who was supposed to protect me and love me, instead of nurturing me, they hurt me. All that is real. We cannot stuff abuse or ignore it. Abuse is real. And we have the possibility of sharing with others that God really cares. That they're not alone in their suffering. They're not alone in their abuse. That there's someone who will listen to them. And eventually that healing and that transformation happens. I love the story of these two young people because, you know, they were accused of a horrible crime. And at the end of that, there was a transformation and true healing. See, and healing takes place when people care. When people around you care. And I believe that God is saying to us today, are we, the followers of Jesus Christ in the 21st century, are we sharing with others this image of the God who cares? Everybody has their image of God. Think about it. Some people still have the image of the God policeman. Oh, God's watching you. Boy, he's watching you. To see what your next infraction is going to be, he's going to write you a ticket. Or the God security guard, you know, the one that's, he's just taking care of me and my needs. Make sure I'm safe. The judgmental God. There's many people who use the, I love it how they use the message. I read an article today by someone, and it was the biblical truth. The biblical truth means believe what I believe, and then you're biblical. Have you seen that? You believe what I believe, and then it's biblical. That's baloney. That's not biblical. It's another B. Baloney. Read the Bible. Read the core of the message of the Bible. The core of the message of the Bible is love God and love neighbor. If it's not love, it's not from God. If it's exclusion, if it's nastiness toward any group, toward anyone, that's not God, and it's not biblical, by the way. Don't use the Bible for that. That's baloney. Don't know, because it says author unknown. But I have in my hands two boxes, it says, which God gave me to hold. He said, put all your sorrows in the black box and all your joys in the gold. I heeded his words, and in the two boxes, both my joys and sorrows I stored. But though the gold became heavier each day, the black was as light as before. With curiosity, I opened the black. I wanted to find out why. And I saw in the base of the box a hole which my sorrows had fallen out by. I showed the hole to God and mused, I wonder where my sorrows could be. He smiled a gentle smile and said, my child, they're all here with me. I asked God why he gave me the boxes. Why the gold and the black with the hole? My child, the gold is for you to count your blessings. The black is for you
to let go. God cares. In the name of God, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Amen.